Native American Presidential Forum that took place in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News, but first, this from KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. That's Drinking from Puddles, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You're tuned in to community-supported KBOO Community Radio. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located on East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 5 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon puts pressure on drug companies to lower prices.
A new rule could restrict public oversight of the Forestry Service.
And in international news, Greenland is not for sale.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 21st, 2019. I'm Leslie McLam.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Today, the Oregon Division of Financial Regulation released a list of the most expensive medications and the medications that cause the greatest insurance rate increases, according to OPB. These lists are a part of Oregon's new prescription drug price transparency law passed by legislature in 2018. Oregon's Insurance Commissioner Andrew Stolfi said, quote, "These lists highlight the goal of the Drug Price Transparency Program. They provide a first step to transparency for Oregonians and help all of us better understand which prescription drugs affect healthcare costs. The law requires drug manufacturers and health insurers to report drug price information to the Oregon Division of Financial Regulation. The lists show that brand name drugs such as Humira and Enbrel, commonly prescribed for rheumatoid arthritis, were at the top of the list of the most expensive drugs and the greatest increase to health plan spending.
Add 400 new jobs to its downtown tech hub, doubling it in size and expanding it across the street. Amazon has been in Portland since 2015, when it bought Portland's startup Elemental Technology for $296 million. Elemental made software to adapt sports, TV shows, and other video to stream online. Today's announcement is the latest sign of a revival in Oregon's tech sector, even as the broader state economy cools.
Today marks the 23rd day of a train blockade protest for coal miners in Cumberland, Kentucky. Their former employer, Black Jewel, announced bankruptcy in the middle of a shift on July 1st, wrote 2 weeks of bad checks to 1,700 miners, and the total amount owed is nearly $5 million, about $3,000 per person. On July 29, the company attempted to send 1 million in coal shipments to a client via train. Several former miners heard about the transfer and organized a blockade, holding signs reading, "No pay, we stay." 23 days later, the miners have not been paid. They have received support from a number of progressive organizations and activists. One miner, Josh Holbrook, expressed his reasons for protest, saying, quote, "We mine the coal and the company says they don't have money to operate, but they're selling the coal, and they can't pay us. I see us blocking the trains until we get paid."
In just the month of August, seven women have sued the rideshare program Lyft for allegations of sexual assault and rape by Lyft drivers. Four female survivors allege that they were raped by their drivers. And after reporting to Lyft about the alleged assaults, the seven riders were still charged for their rides. In the past years, the rideshare program Uber has come under fire for rampant accusations of sexual assault and rape. The company responded by implementing a new app feature called a panic button. This allows riders to dial 911. In May, Lyft announced it would launch a similar feature. An attorney representing the seven women suing Lyft says, "Right now, we have over 100 cases between Lyft and Uber. We're getting new cases every day."
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is looking for patterns.
This Saturday, the so-called Patriots had to text the police to help them get back to their cars. While at a wedding in Afghanistan, 63 people were killed, over 220 injured. Monday in New York, the policeman who murdered Eric Garner lost his job and pension, only took 5 years. What's the pattern here? A wolf pack killed in northeast Washington. The Amazon's been burning for 3 weeks, and we just found out there are more tiger farms than tigers in the wild. A funeral was held in Iceland for Ókhchukwul, their first glacier lost to climate change. You see what's going on. Trump said the economy would bounce back after a couple months of recession. Friday, he said the stock market slumps were caused by the media. Last night, he canceled a trip to Denmark because they won't sell him Greenland. If you're not frightened, you may be delusional enough to be a Republican senator or congressperson. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael. This Saturday, the so-called Patriots.
Now it's time for National Native News, your source for Indigenous news, politics, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick, in for Antonio Gonzalez. At a presidential candidate forum on Native American issues on Tuesday, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders promoted his ongoing themes of environmental protection, climate change, and universal health care. Sanders was the last of the 11 candidates to address the two-day Frank LaMere Native American Presidential Forum in Sioux City, Iowa. He also spoke about respecting sovereignty and improving the federal government's consultation with tribes on projects like oil pipelines. When asked specifically about health care, Sanders acknowledged the federal government is not living up to its legal obligation to provide health care to Native Americans.
And I think we all understand that the Indian Health Service is not doing anywhere near what it should be doing. As somebody who believes absolutely that health care is a human right for the Native American people and for everybody else, we will reform fundamentally the Indian Health Service.
Sanders also called violence against Native women an epidemic and said addressing it will be a high priority if he's elected president. Mark Charles, who's the only Native candidate, spoke extensively about the doctrine of discovery. He says he doesn't want Native voters to support his presidential bid just because he's a citizen of the Navajo Nation.
I don't want them to vote for me just because I'm Native. I want them to hear my proposals. I want them to hear my policies. I want them to hear my critiques of the nation and the foundations. And I want them to vote for me because they believe I'm the best person to do this job. But I do want to challenge Indian country that we've been disenfranchised for so long, but we actually have the power to put a Native candidate on the ballot.
Running as an independent, Charles has to get on the ballot in all 50 states. He's hopeful he can make that happen. Tribal courts can now turn to federal courts when they try to enforce rulings against non-tribal members on a reservation. James Dawson reports from Idaho.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that federal courts do have jurisdiction to take up these kinds of cases.
The doors to the federal courthouse are open to tribal courts and tribes who seek to have their judgments recognized in federal court.
That's Dylan Hedden-Nicely, who runs the Native American Law Program at University of Idaho College of Law. While the ruling cemented a tribe's ability to turn to federal courts in the nine western states covered by the court, Hedden-Nicely says it didn't expand much beyond that.
It did not alter the landscape of when tribes have jurisdiction, civil jurisdiction over non-Indians, when they do not.
The opinion from the Ninth Circuit overturned a lower court ruling from Idaho. The Coeur d'Alene tribe had sued Steve and Deanne Hawks, who lived on the reservation, over a boat garage they had built on the St. Joe's River, land that the tribe says it owns. A tribal court fined the Hawks nearly $4,000 and ruled they had to dismantle the garage in 2016. Following this month's ruling, the Hawks paid that fine and took down the garage. For National Native News, I'm James Dawson.
In Canada, a class action settlement will offer compensation to thousands of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children who attended Indian day schools operated by the federal government. The CBC reported the settlement was approved by the Federal Court of Canada on Monday. It offers compensation amounts ranging from $10,000 to $200,000 and creates a $200 million fund for wellness and healing initiatives. There was an earlier settlement agreement in 2006 that recognized the damage done to former students at residential schools, but the day schools were not part of that settlement. About 150,000 First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children attended residential schools, but the settlement states even more were forced to attend day schools. There's a 90-day opt-out period and a 60-day appeal period for any class members who don't agree with the settlement terms. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo. At 6, it's Say It Out Loud. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, you'll hear Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and a low of 57. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly sunny with a high of 73. Today in history, the vicious guerrilla war in Missouri between pro-slavers and abolitionists crossed the border into the abolitionist town of Lawrence, where 150 men were massacred. The quote of the day comes from Joe Strummer, lead singer of The Clash, born this day in 1952. People can change anything they want to, and that means everything in the world.
The Trump administration announced today a new rule that would allow them to detain migrant families indefinitely. This rule, which will be put in the Federal Registry Friday, replaces a 1997 court ruling that bars the federal government from holding immigrant children more than 20 days. An ever-increasing immigration court backlog could result in families being held for years. Denise Bell, researcher with Amnesty International USA, said, quote, "It is beyond logic and humanity to attempt to keep children locked up for as long as possible, especially when we know that this subjects them to trauma and extreme distress."
Today, President Trump announced he is seriously looking at using an executive order to end birthright citizenship for children born to parents who immigrated to the U.S. illegally. Earlier this year, President Trump raised the same claim that he would sign an executive order to end birthright citizenship for immigrant children born in the U.S. At the time, several lawmakers argued that President Trump did not have the authority to use executive order to enact this change. Many of these lawmakers cited the 14th Amendment as a protection of birthright citizenship. This birthright citizenship change is another attack on immigrants, just as today, Trump announced that his administration would remove the Flores Settlement Agreement, which requires that immigrant children be held no longer than 20 days.
Some call the Amazon rainforest one of the lungs of the planet, and it's been burning for over 3 weeks. Brazil has had more than 72,000 fire outbreaks so far this year, an 84% increase over 2018, with more than half of the fires in the Amazon. There was a sharp spike in deforestation during July, followed by extensive burning in August, with increases attributed to weaker enforcement of regulation. Since Jair Bolsonaro became Brazil's president, the environmental agency has issued fewer penalties to rule breakers. Today, Bolsonaro blamed environmental groups for starting the fires in the Amazon in an attempt to embarrass him. Yesterday, smoke darkened the skies of the largest city in the Western Hemisphere, São Paulo, Brazil, 1,500 miles from the fire. Neighboring Bolivia also has had unusually large wildfires that have destroyed over 2,000 square miles of forest.
Today it was announced that President Trump will not be making his scheduled trip to Denmark amid reports that Denmark refused to sell President Trump the country of Greenland. That's from the New York Times. Denmark Prime Minister added that Greenland is not for Denmark to sell, quote, "Greenland is not Danish. Greenland belongs to Greenland." All of this comes a day after President Trump wrote on Twitter that Denmark was a, quote, "very special country with incredible people." Since then, today, Trump has characterized Denmark Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen as, quote, "nasty" when she refused to sell Greenland and called the conversation, quote, "an absurd discussion." President Trump has notably used this word toward female politicians during his candidacy and presidency. Trump claims he had the skills to buy Greenland because, quote, "it's just another real estate deal."
A new rule revision could limit the ability of advocacy groups to safeguard public forests and other important habitats. The National Environmental Policy Act requires that before any governmental agencies can undertake an action, they must analyze the environmental consequences, make that analysis available to the public, and accept and consider public input. Many advocacy groups rely on this policy to watchdog agencies like the U.S. Forest Service. Now, their ability to do so may be threatened. KBOO's Althea Billing spoke to Brenna Bell Park about the proposed changes to the act.
Hi, my name is Brenna Bell. I'm the staff attorney and policy coordinator for BARC.
So what is BARC and what does it do?
BARC is a grassroots organization focused on advocating for more environmental, ecological, and community management of Mount Hood National Forest. It's Portland's backyard forest. It provides our water. It provides amazing recreation. It sequesters carbon. It is such an amazing resource, and unfortunately, the Forest Service is under the direction to increase logging on it for no other reason than to benefit the timber industry and the politicians who they pay. So BARC's work right now is to try and publicly advocate and grow awareness that national forests are not national parks, they are not protected, and the exploitation of them for commercial value is increasing under the Trump administration.
So what is the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA?
The National Environmental Policy Act was one of the kind of sweeping environmental reforms that happened in the 1970s, one of Nixon's legacies, and, well, not Nixon necessarily, I'd say the grassroots movement who pushed Nixon to sign all of these laws. And people call it the basic charter for environmental analysis and public transparency for the federal government. NEPA essentially says that for any major federal action that the government undertakes, it has to do two main things. One is analyze the impacts of its action on the environment, and the second is disclose those impacts to the public and allow for public comment and receive that comment and to some extent incorporate it into the final decision making. So that has been the law that, even though it doesn't specifically protect the environment substantively, it creates government transparency and public accountability when the federal government is taking action to affect the environment. So on national forests, that's a huge deal. For every major action they take for timber sales, for mining, for grazing, for other extractive projects, the Forest Service has to analyze the impacts and then disclose those to the public. It's the main tool we have for knowing what's going on public lands. And it's one of the main tools I use as an environmental attorney to ensure that the Forest Service is following its legal requirements to make those disclosures and to incorporate public comment. And is under threat, of course.
Right. So what are the proposed changes to NEPA and why make them?
Good question. Currently, the Forest Service is doing what's called an administrative rulemaking. So it's not legislation. It just goes through the agency. And what it would do is radically redefine what a major federal action is in such a way that almost everything the Forest Service does now would be excluded from review under NEPA. It's called categorical exclusions, things that you just know don't have a major impact, so why even study them? And that will apply to timber sales as large as 7,300 acres, like 7 square miles of timber sale, and up to 5 miles of new road building at a time. Roads have a huge impact on Mount Hood National Forest because of all the water and the sediment mix that goes into our salmon streams. About 90% of Forest Service projects would no longer be covered by environmental analysis or public review. And the why is Trump, in a word. A couple years ago, one of his first executive orders was to demand the Forest Service increase the amount of timber logged on national forests. Not because there's an economic need or even a market, not because the forests are, you know, overproducing, like some people say, or need to be cleansed for forest health, but because there's important politicians in his party that are funded by timber interests. He said, increase the cut and change any regulations you need to make that possible. So the Forest Service put forth these regulations. They say it's so they can just increase the pace and scale of restoration and fuels reduction on the forest. But what they mean is increase the amount of volume harvested from the forest to meet those Trump targets.
So what impact would the changes have on bark and on Oregon as a whole?
The major change is that it would exclude the public from oversight of our own federal lands. And that's really important because the Forest Service is currently understaffed. They are not given the budget they need to make sure that they comply with all the existing laws. They don't have money to do the surveys, to adequately analyze the things that are going on. So groups like BARC take volunteers out to the forest. We walk all sorts of timber sales, almost every unit, and we gather that information, give it to the Forest Service. We say, hey, our volunteers found that there's a stream here where you said there wasn't a stream, you need to buffer it. Or just recently, we had volunteers climbing trees at the North Clack timber sale, finding red tree vole nests that the Forest Service didn't know was there, and they needed to buffer it. So then, because of NEPA, we have the information about what the Forest Service is planning to do. We give them that information, and then they can change their projects to protect those kind of most sensitive resources because of it. And this just closes the door to that whole process. For BARC, it takes away one of our major tools. It actually takes away a lot of our toolbox. It's not just a tool. It's like half the toolbox is going to get chucked out. I became a forest activist in the era of the salvage rider in the mid-90s when similarly there was a rider that it prevented judicial review from timber sales in the Northwest for 2 years. And so all the legal tools got chucked out the door. And what happened was we took to the trees, we took to the streets, we started protesting, we blocked roads. It was our recourse. And that might be what happens again. You know, it was kind of fun. But if this goes through, I'm hoping that it will instigate a whole new era of that kind of action. But for groups like BARC who focus on getting people into the forest, gathering high-quality information, giving it to the Forest Service, having projects change, like that's what we've been focused on, and that will become unavailable to us. So it's not going to increase the cut. I mean, it will just increase more polarization and dissension.
So you mentioned a little bit of how BARC has used NEPA in the past. Are there bigger project examples?
Mm-hmm. every timber sale that happens, we gather this kind of information. One thing that comes to my mind right now, because I just had a conversation with an old colleague this morning, we were reminiscing about when BARC helped stop the Palomar pipeline, which was a proposed liquefied natural gas pipeline across Mount Hood National Forest and then across Western Oregon to export LNG to Asia. That was a huge fight. And one of the things BARC did, we organized a hike the pipe, where we hiked the 40 miles that the pipeline would have gone across Mount Hood National Forest in a big linear clear cut, gathered all that information, and during the NEPA process, gave it all to the Forest Service. And in this one instance, the Forest Service didn't like the pipe either. They weren't having to meet their timber targets. They just had to host this pipeline. So they took BARC's information and incorporated that into their own NEPA comments. And we were able to use that on-the-ground information to really push back against the pipeline, which never got built and is still not going to be built. So in that, just the ability to have public transparency and accountability can be huge on altering or even stopping projects.
What can people do to show their support for the current iteration of NEPA and BARC?
Well, there's a few things. Extinction Rebellion is hosting. They heard this news through a BARC email and got excited and got activated, and they're hosting a protest on Thursday, tomorrow, at noon across from the Forest Service headquarters, which is in the federal building at 1220 Southwest 3rd. So if people want to just come to a rally, that'll be tomorrow at noon. Also, there's a public comment process that the Forest Service is accepting public comments. It was supposed to be closed on August 12th. They extended it to August 26th. And folk can go to the Forest Service website. There's a comment portal, and you can let them know the importance of NEPA and why that those tools should stay in public hands. I think there will be many more opportunities. But I think the most important thing is people need to remember that national forests are key to so many things. In Oregon, most of our water in Western Oregon, in Eastern Oregon also, is generated from national forests. I mean, first and foremost, that should be enough. Like, we should all be working to protect our water. But more and more people are understanding how important national forests are for climate change and climate mitigation. They are huge carbon sequesters. It's one of the best resources Oregon has for the global climate change movement is to protect our standing forest, protect our old growth. And old growth is on the chopping block again. Clear cuts are being proposed again. Like, all the bad old practices we thought had stopped are back under Trump, and we're losing tools. So I think the main thing people need to do is just remember that these fights that we were fighting in the 90s are not won. And they are relevant again. And in the climate change era, the context is even more important that we need to protect our standing forests.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Well, listeners, if you are like super excited right now and want to get in Mountain Hood National Forest, BARC is hosting our fourth annual base camp right now. We do a 2-week public camp out in Mountain Hood National Forest, and folk are up by Timothy Lake. It's actually right, our campsite is right on the route of the proposed pipeline that we helped stop. And we'd love to see you out in the forest. It's going until September 2nd. And if you can't make that but want to go into the forest, we also do public hikes every single month. Been doing it for 20 years. We'd love to get folk out into the forest, discover what they love about it, and then give them the tools to help save it. And like I said, the trees need us. The trees need more Ents, people who can speak for the trees and work on fighting and advocating for them, because they are our lifeline and they need us. And this is one of those times in history that we need to step up again for forests.
Brenna, thanks so much for speaking with me.
Yeah, thank you.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Althea Billings.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 21st, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael. The producer is Claire Rosciato. And our engineer is Althea Billings. The director of Evening News and Public Affairs is also Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Leslie McLamb. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7 a.m., it'll be Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. And then at 8, it's Voices from the Edge with guest host Linda Olsen-Osterlund. At 9 a.m., Press Watch looks at the news you're not supposed to know. Then at 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show. At 11 a.m., Between the Covers. And at 11:30, it'll be Words and Pictures. Don't forget, you can hear all these programs after they air anytime on kboo.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. KBOO programs are made possible by member support, so if you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use your mobile app and click on Donate. Next up is News from the Boo.